The Money Show brought to you by Old Mutual, a licensed financial services provider. Today's the day. Get great financial advice. Do great things. Welcome to The Money Show. There's been a boom in the global gin industry. It's become very, very trendy to have craft gins. And we've seen so many people give up their day jobs and to go into distilling gin. And one of those people was at university with me a very long time ago. We actually served on the Rhodes University Students Representative Council. I'm not going to give the date because that will make Lucy Beard feel old, but it's really nice to have you on The Money Show, Lucy.
Thank you. It's really good to be here. And please don't tell everyone how old I am, although I seem to think that you were slightly older than me, Bruce.
Oh, considerably older, considerably older, and so much wiser at the time.
Absolutely.
But now, listen, you left Rhodes University and you went off to London, and you and your partner, Lee Lisk, went in and made, no doubt, lots of money as lawyers in the City of London. Did the City of London just wear you down eventually, as it does to most people?
It didn't wear us down, but it was the weather that wore us down. And so we decided to take a year out and follow the sun. And that was when we really fell in love with gin and decided to kick in corporate life and start a distillery.
With the global nature of gin and the way that, in particularly the UK, where you were, the gin revolution, I don't know if the craft revolution started there, but certainly it was very big there a couple of years ago. You could have stayed, but the weather was just too awful.
Absolutely. We needed some Cape Town sun.
You got some Cape Town sun. So you started up a distillery in Woodstock. I mean, Woodstock, was it Salt River? Where exactly are you?
Salt River. We are trying to get Salt River in the map. But everyone does refer to us as being in Woodstock. But yeah, we're strictly speaking Salt River. And in fact, one of our gins we've actually called Salt River Gin, just to really highlight that fact.
And so you've got Salt River Gin, you've got Hope on Hopkins. Are you on Hopkins Street? Is that why you've called it Hope on Hopkins?
Yes, that's right. And we hope like hell it works. That's where the hope fits in.
Forgive me for being blunt about this, but I mean, starting any kind of business is tough. You live above the distillery, I have read, so you cut some costs there. But starting up a business like this is pretty pricey, I would think. A lot of quite expensive equipment and capital cost required.
Indeed. And it took us a bit longer than expected to actually get going, mainly due to licensing. And so we nearly ran out of money. And we got to realize how so many small businesses actually don't quite get there because the red tape ends up being far more onerous than you anticipate. But luckily, we did get there.
Yeah, as you've proven. But when it came to the red tape that you faced, was there additional red tape to what ordinary small businesses face in addition to that red tape because of the licensing you talk about? In order to produce alcohol commercially, do you need special regulatory requirements there?
Absolutely. It's twofold. So there's a licensing perspective from a liquor licensing sort of aspect, but then also you have to pay excise duty on producing alcohol. So there was a SARS perspective as well.
Okay, so a huge amount of red tape that had to be done. How long did that process take? From the moment you took a year out and went to chase the sun and then fell in love with gin and then made the decision to start the distillery, did you make the decision then that it would be Cape Town, or did you look about a bit as to where, did you prospect a little bit?
We had pretty much decided on Cape Town and then came to check the scene out, as it were, just to see if we thought that gin would work. We thought it would, and my goodness, we didn't realize it would quite have the boom effect that it has done. But we had set our hearts on Cape Town.
What led you was the attraction of Cape Town, and then, oh boy, we better do something. So you then create this distillery. What was the capital, what was the setup cost, if I can be so blunt and rude as to ask?
We did it in stages, and we were lucky enough that we did have pounds that we were bringing back, and at that stage it was 20 to 1, which was quite helpful. Mm-hmm. We spent in the high 100,000s. And we have since sort of now actually invested further now that we've got cash flow. And because we started off a bit on a wing and a prayer, but now we have invested in more equipment to make things just run a bit more smoothly.
And you've got names for your stills.
We do. So our stills are named after our grandmothers.
were they gin appreciators in their day?
No, we actually aren't that sure, but They were hard workers and were resilient in the face of all sorts of challenges. And that's certainly what our stills are. So we thought
What are your stills names?
They are Maud, Mildred and Muma. And we have just acquired Mad Mary, but she is not operational as yet, sadly.
A Mad Mary. Who's Mad Mary named after?
I have to admit, it's my mother.
I was wondering. I mean, we called her Professor, but was she Professor? Was she Doctor?
She was Doctor.
Doctor, yes.
AKA Mad Mary.
One of the finest English lecturers in the history of education. And by the way, Toby Shapshak, who was at university, has been WhatsApping me this evening to tell me that Your Hope on Hopkins is his favorite.
Oh.
And if it's made by Mad Mary, I think you'll love it even more. You look at your gin production, and how many do you measure it in liters? Do you measure, how do you measure the volumes in gin? Beer is done in hectoliters. You don't produce gin on that sort of volume, and certainly not craft gin, which has got to be lovingly and slowly distilled and then infused with all kinds of flavors.
Indeed. So we measure it by the bottle. We started off making about 500 bottles a month. We then actually developed our business by starting to distill gin for other brands. One of the joys is actually designing recipes and coming up with different concoctions of botanical flavors. So we now distill gin for 6 other brands and are up to an average of about 10,000 bottles a month, which is way more than we ever anticipated.
And have you got capacity to do more?
We do. We sort of, as I say, we've been reinvesting in the business. The bottleneck used to be labeling, and we have recently invested in a labeling machine, which is amazing. And now the bottleneck is bottling. But with Mad Mary coming on board, at least distilling won't be an issue.
When it comes to this extraordinary revolution in gin, and one looks at the massively diverse flavors that have been infused into gin, the process of making gin, it's getting alcohol, and so you've got to distill alcohol. What is the base of that alcohol? Is it a grain-based alcohol? How do you create the base?
It can be anything, actually. So gin starts life as a neutral spirit of vodka. We make 2 of our Hope on Hopkins gins from grain. We make 1 of them from grape, and then most of the contract gins we make are from cane spirit. But ultimately, you distill that, or we buy in the cane until it's neutral, and then you distill it 1 more time with botanicals, and that's what turns it into gin. One of those botanicals has to be the juniper berry, and that's what allows you to call it gin rather than simply a flavored vodka.
Because I remember Mainstay winning some global vodka prize, and people were outraged. It's not a vodka, but it is. It's a plain spirit.
Indeed. I think South Africa is one of the few countries in the world that calls it cane. Everyone else, it's just vodka.
Well, not just vodka. I mean, the vodka market is huge. Don't you bottle vodka as well? Don't you have a vodka label?
We do. So we decided, we looked at vodka, and we thought that we would release our grain vodka as vodka, but we realized that that was quite a niche market because it's almost an unaged whiskey. And when we started distilling our Mediterranean gin, which is grape-based, we realized that Ciroc, which is one of the biggest selling vodkas in the world, is actually grape-based.
Ah.
And so that is our small batch vodka.
And what brand does that go under?
It's Hope on Hopkins, Hope Small Batch Vodka.
Okay, stick to the brands. I'm talking to Lucy Beard this evening, lawyer doing something useful, which is going into the gin business. And traditionally, when you look at gin, it's in South Africa 20 years ago, you could get Beefeater, which has now rebranded itself as a premium gin. You've got to pay through the nose for that. You could get Gordon's and not much else. And now, any sort of liquor store you go into has got an array of at least 30, sometimes 40 gins. And there are specialist gin bars, which are opening. And much of that is due to the work that Lucy Beard and her partner, Lee Lisk, who spend their days toiling and suffering and slaving and concocting and creating and changing the way in which South Africans look at the gin revolution. More with Lucy Beard in a moment. What do you call somebody who makes gin? A gineologist, a distiller? What title do you prefer, Lucy Beard?
I think I prefer distiller.
Distiller.
Yeah, it's what we do. But although gin crafting is also what we do a lot of, but yeah, distilling is the essence of it.
If you've ever seen Blutlemun gin or Clement Gold gin or Musgrave Pink gin, very popular, Southern Cross gin, Blossom and Hops gin, it all comes from the same place. And that is the place that produces Hope on Hopkins gin. And its distiller is Lucy Beard. We're talking all about the gin revolution and the huge growth that they've seen from producing 500 bottles a month to 10,000 bottles a month in their own labels, but also for other producers as well. What is fueling the revolution?
I think people are waking up to the fact that gin doesn't need to taste just of juniper berries anymore. So people thought of gin and they thought of a certain drink. It was a Gordon's or, you know, Tanqueray taste. It's quite similar. Suddenly, the craft revolution in Europe in particular saw small distilleries using unique and unusual botanicals, and gins were no longer juniper-led. South Africa, we have fynbos, we have all sorts of, we've got the sort of African spice root of spices available. And so there were all these interesting and unusual flavors that we could infuse into the gins. And suddenly people thought, oh, wow, you know, you can have a range of gins, all that taste completely different to each other. And so it's all about, yeah, finding the gin that you love, finding a gin for a particular moment.
Take me through the process of deciding what sort of botanicals you do. Do you go out for a walk on Table Mountain with a pair of shears and cut some fynbos and then pop it into the still with your vodka and see what comes out? Or is there a more calculated process that goes on?
Slightly more calculated, and sadly we're not allowed to walk on Table Mountain and prune the fynbos.
Just testing you.
But we did actually spend a weekend on a wonderful farm in the Windhoek Mountains, where a lot of fynbos grows, and actually where Andrew Brown, also a lawyer, funnily enough. And
you're the only ones who can afford to go for this fanciful journey.
He has an essential oil farm. Well, he farms for essential oils. And we spent a weekend there just discovering some of the flavors and aromas of fynbos. And so that was the path of our Salt River gin. And then we've just distilled a lot with a whole range of different flavors to see how we can play around and blend things. But the key to a gin is ultimately sort of deciding what style of gin you want, what flavor notes, and then ensuring that you get balance by, so a recipe is tweaking, redistilling, playing around with different levels of botanicals until you're happy.
I met a man, I think he was an Irishman or a Scotsman, at the Whiskey Live event in Johannesburg last year, and he was doing bathtub gin, literally a bathtub full of alcohol that you throw sticks and twigs and cinnamon and whatever else takes your fancy into, and you leave it there to sort of assume the flavors and then siphon it off, and there's your gin. Do you do that sort of raw infusion, or do you take the oils that have already been themselves distilled from natural botanicals and infuse those? How does that process work?
No, so we actually distill the gin. So you put the botanicals in the still, either in the liquid where they macerate but at high temperature. So the bathtub gin is maceration of the botanicals, whereas we macerate while we're distilling. Distilling is essentially, it's a separation process. So you're heating the liquid in the still. It's a combination of alcohol and water. The alcohol has a lower boiling point than water, so it evaporates first. It takes the flavors of the plant material that are in the still. The oils sort of are captured by that vapor. And then we also use vapor baskets. So we actually put the more delicate botanicals in baskets that sit above the liquid in the still. And the vapor infuses through those botanicals and strips the oils from them. And then you condense the vapor down to liquid form, and that is your gin. You then blend it down to bottling strength with water. Bottling strength here is 43. And what you've got in the bottle contains the oils of the botanicals that you've used.
Yuri Trishkov on my Twitter feed says, how is the water shortage in Cape Town affecting the distillery? Do you need a lot of water to make gin?
We do need a lot of water to make gin. I know lots of people say, save water, drink gin, not realizing quite how much water goes into making gin. We've had to tweak the way we distill. As I was saying, it's a mix of alcohol and water in the still. We've actually reduced the water content. and are looking to put in a borehole, which is actually being sunk in 2 weeks' time, just to ensure that we aren't too dependent on Cape Town water supplies. But we also, our cooling system is completely closed, so we recycle all our water as and where we can.
Jeff in Soweto says, what's the difference between gin and Mampur? I hope you don't take, because Mampur can be grape based. I mean, but Mampur, I mean, if you've read enough Herman Charles Bosman, you know it comes from a peach brandy, and there are various ways of extracting alcohol for most things, Jeff.
Absolutely. Now, hopefully people don't confuse gin and Mampur. Gin is a far purer alcohol, so you've distilled it to a much higher purity. And that actually takes a lot of the harshness. And so it shouldn't give you the hangover that some Mampurs give you.
But is there a global standard on what did Windhoek say, the Rheinsgebot, in terms of making Windhoek lager? Is there a Rheinsgebot sort of rule that goes along with gin making?
There only is for London dry style gins. So ultimately, a gin has to be start life as a neutral spirit, so have been distilled to a high percentage, and then it's got to be infused with juniper berries. Those are kind of the two basic rules. For a London dry gin, there are a few other rules, one of which also ensures that it's taken to the low 90s in terms of alcohol percentage, and that you only use natural ingredients.
So how then do you succeed in getting, what was James Bond's great line in Casino Royale where he asked for a Gordon's? How do you get him to say, no, I'll have Salt River gin, please? you'd never be able to keep up with demand. But realistically, do you ever see yourselves becoming exporters of craft gin, or is the global market simply too competitive?
The global market is pretty competitive. We have had sort of a number of countries interested in taking the gin. Our pricing is a challenge. Everyone thinks, oh, you know, the rand, it must be cheap. But actually, we import our juniper berries and some of the other botanicals. We also, sadly, import our bottles because it's a challenge to find anything decent locally.
The bottle is the character of the product.
Indeed.
You've got to define, you've got to stand out on the shelf. It is as much a visual as it is, it's a very sensory purchase.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, the first buying decision will always be on the look of the product. The second buying decision will be if the product was worth drinking in the first place.
And what are you finding? I mean, market acceptance of gins, because you can buy a bottle of Gordon's, I don't know when last it did, but I mean, say for under $100, and the craft gins are anything between the $300 to $500 when I've looked in South Africa.
No, indeed. And it's been quite incredible, the willingness of people to spend money on craft gin. And we don't have the economies of scale of the big guys. And we are, you know, our focus is on trying to source everything as locally as possible. High quality ingredients, and yeah, literally, you know, it's our hands making it, so we're never going to be able to bring it in at a lower cost, but certainly people are willing to pay the price.
What about the trend of tonics? Because I had a gin and some tonic the other day, and the tonic was a very expensive tonic. It was a very special tonic, no names, no pectoral. And it ruined the blimmin' gin. What's wrong with Schweppes?
There's nothing wrong with Schweppes, although I might be killed for saying that. But ultimately, my attitude as a gin distiller is I want my gin to be tasted. So, the gin needs to shine through. And so the tonic ultimately, in the words of Fitch and Leeds brands, which was one of the brands we like, the tonic is the understudy to the gin. And so anything too highly flavored, too sweet, I'm not, you know, I've worked so hard to get the particular flavors into all the gins we make. I don't want it to be taken over by the tonic. But ultimately, gin is designed to go with tonic. They both have bittersweet elements, and they are a very good match. But yeah, there are a growing number of local tonics who are doing a fantastic job.
Mark from Sunset Beach Wine says he's got invoice number one from Hope on Hopkins.
He does indeed. And in fact, he came before we even had boxes to deliver, and we delivered to him in a milk crate.
And is he a good and regular customer?
He is indeed.
Does he pay his bills?
He does. Sometimes with a bit of chasing.
Everyone needs to be chased a little bit. Lucy, I mean, it's so exciting that you're doing this, that you are revolutionizing revolutionizing the world of gin and taking and bringing craft to this, the epicenter of craft in South Africa, which is in Cape Town. And we wish you luck with it. It's wonderful to see entrepreneurs really putting their own hard-earned cash into South African businesses. And I hope the returns, you're rewarded with good returns.
Thank you very much.
Not the returns of the gin, but the natural returns. Lucy Beard, distiller, Hope on Hopkins, Salt River Gin, plus a whole bunch of others that she produces on behalf of other brands as well, from Musgrave to others, all produced in a distillery in Salt River in Cape Town.